The latest investigation by Jim Heaney's crew at Investigative Post focuses on two specialized groups of law enforcement in Buffalo that critics have described as vigilantes. Jim, who is the founder, editor, and executive director of the Investigative Post, joins us with details. Jim, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Susan?
I'm fine. So tell us about this strike force and housing units and their mission and why they were established.
Buffalo has a serious violent crime problem. It's for a city its size, it's one of the most violent places in the country. The mayor, over the course of the last 4 years, is established for something called Strike Force, whose job is to basically go out and find trouble and deal with it. You know, shorthand, that they're assigned to mostly inner city neighborhoods where there's a lot of gang activity. And then he then created a housing unit to do likewise in the public housing projects, of which Buffalo has about 25. So they're kind of a, you know, special squads within the police department.
Are they elite units? Do they have special training?
Buffalo police training? To be honest with you, I don't know.
What Daniela Porat, who is the reporter here, did is go through the docket of about, 10 cases in which the strike force or housing units were involved. And what did she find?
She found examples that defense lawyers tell us are only the tip of the iceberg. These squads conduct unconstitutional searches, stop people without sufficient cause, and then, you know, judges in these 10 cases throughout, you know, ruled the searches were illegal and improper, and in throughout the evidence that was seized. In a couple of these cases, the judges actually ruled that the testimony the officers provided was simply not believable, refuted in one instance by video, and in another instance, the judge just said, I just can't believe what you're telling me is, it's, I think the word he used was inventive.
Inventive, right. What I think gives this story heft is that in at least a few of the instances, judges have been raising these questions, not simply activists or defense attorneys. I was hoping that you could give us an example of some of the questions raised by judges about officer testimony, just to give us a sense of what we're talking about.
Well, you know, in one instance, the officers testified that a suspect in broad daylight, in view of police, took drugs out of one pocket and put it in another. And the judge was like, "Really? I don't." And there were witnesses that testified, gave a much different version of events, but the judge simply didn't believe that someone who was experienced, shall we say, in encounters with law enforcement would actually show the cops his drugs.
And this would speak to whether or not it was a legal search and seizure, basically. There was another case that I was shocked by that's still active, actually. A woman testified that this group, these police, threatened her with Child Protective Services if she didn't fill out a form saying that she had allowed the police to search her home.
I mean, you kind of captured it. You know, the cops came in. The judge later ruled that the search was improper. The cops, to cover themselves, said, "We want you to sign this form saying that you've consented to the search, and if you don't, I guess we're going to have to call Child Protective Services on you." And a woman was petrified, and
testified to that.
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts, you know, above and beyond, are these searches proper under the Constitution or not? Daniela uncovered all sorts of examples of police really using unnecessary force, very inappropriate language. We quoted one witness in the story who said, and I'll be very careful, Susan, not to get you in trouble with the FCC. But the one witness, I think it was in the same case.
Yeah.
Or maybe it wasn't. But anyways, somebody testified that they were protesting the search. And a strike force officer said, and the quote in the testimony was, "We work for the mayor. We're strike force. We can do whatever the F we want." And that, according to the Vents attorneys that Daniela interviewed and some activists, that seems to be the attitude that some of these guys, not all of them, but I mean, between housing and it's worth noting that between housing and strike force, there's 38 officers presently on the force. And over the last 3 or 4 years, 12 of them have been implicated in these types of illegal searches. So it's not like one or two bad, quote, bad apples, unquote. This seems to be perhaps part of the culture of these units,
well,
that we
it
can
must,
do whatever we want.
Does that not speak to, you know, that must come from the top?
Well, it's certainly tolerated by the top. You know, Daniela interviewed a department spokesman who said, you know, we're not aware of this, and we wouldn't condone this. You know, you don't want to do anything that's going to wind up, you know, getting cases thrown out of court. But I can't, on the other hand, I can't believe that that the commissioner and the top lieutenants in the department aren't aware of this kind of behavior. They ought to be aware. if you're in charge of this force, you ought to know what they're really up to.
Well, they're aware now.
Yeah, but you know, it goes, you know, to the top. I mean, I found the mayor's reaction to the story kind of telling. The story aired last week, and the next day, Dan Telvac went to interview the mayor the next morning at a public event because the mayor does not agree to sit down interviews with us.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to go find him at events. And when the mayor saw Dan the following morning, he ducked behind a curtain and basically refused to come out. And his press spokesman said, you're not getting an interview today. And then the same press spokesman, Mike DeGeorge, called Daniela later in the afternoon, berated her, and told her that he was cutting her off permanently from the mayor. I will never let you get close to the mayor again. So, you know, from the top, when the top is informed by the press that there's a problem with these units that the mayor created, the mayor's response is to basically shoot the messenger or attempt to shoot the messenger.
What about the police commissioner? He also denied a request from you?
Well, we wanted to talk to him. We wanted to talk to the officers involved, get their firsthand, you know, get the other side of the story. And there's a department rule that says individual officers cannot speak to the press without the okay from the department. And so we went to the commissioner's people and said, we'd like to talk to these 12 officers, and we're told flatly, absolutely not. Absolutely not. So we were relying, and we went to the Police Benevolent Association and asked them if they would intercede to get these officers access to us, and or at least speak on their behalf. And the PBA didn't want to get into the specifics of any of the cases. So, you know, we feel like we really went the extra mile to try and get either these officers or someone on their behalf to speak about these individual cases. And nobody wanted to talk, except the defense lawyers.
Well,
and the defense lawyers have a lot to say. They say this is part of a pattern where you've got units that roam the city now and basically stop black men, sometimes without justification, and the people in the community, you know, and the problem with this, because people may say, oh, it's just the cops, you know, messing around with the gangbangers, you know, let them have at it. But Buffalo has a well-established problem with witness cooperation in crimes. people don't like to cooperate with the police.
Because they don't trust the police. You've written much about this, sure.
Yeah, and so this helps. You know, these tactics, one could, I think, reasonably argue, are really counterproductive. If you want to build relationships with the community, you don't, you know, it's not just, you know, stopping gangs. These units also set up police traffic checkpoints throughout the community. You could be just driving down the street, minding your own business, and it would not be unusual for you to be stopped in the streets. Just driving down a street. So, you know, these people in the community are telling us these have had a very negative impact on public attitudes toward the police within the very communities that they need to have cooperation if they're to deal with crime.
Yeah, there was a very interesting back and forth between your reporter and a woman who lives in the community who said, I don't want my child to have a gun in his pocket. I want the police to find the gun and take the gun out of his pocket. But I don't want them to do it in such a way that it's, you know, not the way it's supposed to be, you know, unconstitutional.
Yeah, and there's a fear of police violence. I mean, since that story ran on Friday, two members of the housing unit were named in a federal wrongful death lawsuit. A young Hispanic man was shot during an encounter with Buffalo police earlier this year, and an attorney for the family filed a lawsuit in federal court on Friday, basically alleging that the police shot this guy down in cold blood. And this is the second individual, second male of color since the first of the year who has died in encounters with Buffalo police. So, you know, there's a lot going on here. And
do you think, you said to me once that, you know, a Ferguson could happen in Buffalo. Is that still something that you believe?
Susan, I think it's quite possible that we've had two Fergusons in Buffalo this year alone. You know, we've had two men of color die in the midst of encounters with Buffalo police. And the circumstances of which are being investigated by the state attorney general, as is the rule right now.
Right, sure.
But there are, you know, there are people in the community who are very concerned about this. I mean, you know, we've documented over the last year, you know, the police department is not accredited by an outside agency the way most departments its size are. Departments undertrained when it comes to dealing with potentially violent situations with people in the street. You've got these two police units now that if court records and defense attorneys are to be believed are running roughshod over people's constitutional rights and alienating a lot of people in the Black and Hispanic communities is a byproduct. You know, Buffalo has a policing problem. If the mayor wants to admit it or not, that's the reality. And now the question becomes, like, the common council here has a police oversight committee that rarely meets. It just happens to be meeting tomorrow. We'll be there to see what they do. They have, over the course of last year, steadfastly avoided tackling any of the issues of substance involving the police department. And it's going to be interesting to see whether or not the council steps to the plate and addresses these issues head on tomorrow.
We have to go. We're out of time. But just another really frightening story out of Investigative Post, www.investigativepost.org. Jim Heaney is the founder, editor, and executive director of the Investigative Post. Thank you so much. We'll be in touch.
Take care, Susan.
Take care.
Support for Capital Pressroom comes from Deloitte. For 135 years, Deloitte has worked with the people, organizations, and governments of New York. Decades of solving problems. Decades of experience yielding a mountain of insights. Insights to help make the next collaboration more efficient, more successful. Deloitte. Insights.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.